council work meeting for Wednesday, October 10th. We'd like to excuse Councilwoman Ohr. She is out of town. Councilman Henderson had a previous engagement, and Councilwoman Martin is actually joining us electronically by phone. So we do have a quorum here tonight. First item is a review of tonight's agenda. Is there any items that we need to discuss for tonight?
None for me, Mayor.
Okay. All right. Any future agenda items that we'd like to put on a future meeting? Well, okay. Well, we will go straight into item 3.1, discussion of a text change to the land development code regarding various alcohol licenses. Michael.
Just a couple of quick updates for your information tonight. So the Planning Commission did make a recommendation to amend Title 10, the Land Use Development Code, relative to alcohol regulations. We're primarily updating our regulations to be consistent with the state, whereas the state has updated their standards and types of licensing that they are permitting. So the commission recommended that we adopt all of the various permits that the state issues and to use the same standards as the state recommends or requires. Along with an amendment to Title 10, we will also be bringing to you an amendment to Title 3, the business licensing section, to correspond with that. Our current licensing requirements are out of sync with the state. And so regardless, we have to be amending that portion as well, irrespective of any final decision of the council on the amendments to the land use. So we'll be bringing that to you. And John is, I believe, currently reviewing that draft, primarily Title 3. That's not recommended by the Planning Commission. They don't have any authority to make a recommendation to you on the business license amendments. So we'll be bringing that to you. Any questions? I think we included the specific chart in the zoning code and the draft business license amendments.
This is pretty much what we discussed in our work meeting.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
There was no changes in terms of the chart and permitted condition, all those things as far as from the Planning Commission, is
right.
that correct?
Right.
One thing that just I think would be helpful at some point, and certainly not tonight, just to have a review of the types of, with the changes in the state law, the types of establishments that we have currently in our city, and if there's any of those, I guess, licenses that are currently available, if there's other establishments that want to come in, just so that we know as a council where we're sitting and in relation to current statute and how the establishments are licensed within our community.
All right, we'll give you a report on existing conditions.
Okay, I think we ought to do that pretty soon in the work meeting, because we do have a couple of applicants coming in to want to bring businesses and be able to do serve food and alcohol coming up. So it'd be a perfect time.
Yeah, I think that it'd be a great review for us to have and be able to understand exactly how those licenses now are looked at and administered by the state.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right. We'll move on to the 3.2. which is a discussion relating to the development within the proposed annexation area.
So this is primarily an update. We had been talking with the council about a potential need to have an interlocal agreement with the county. We're currently been working on a potential development of about 30 acres within the annexation that the city has been studying, the 267 acres. It now looks, based on the development timeline and the developer's contracts with engineering firms and construction firms, that the only permit we're needing in order to meet the objective from the county is a grading permit. And so in your packet, we put in some bullet points as far as some deadlines and application dates relative to city process. But you'll also notice the second bullet point, we talked about how the applicant needs to submit a grading permit to the county late October or early November. The county is saying that as long as that application is complete, their review process and permitting should only take about a week. They really need that permit by November 15th. And it appears that they're on track to submit all the materials that they need to with the county. So right now, that's the only piece that the county would administer is this grading permit. Everything else would be done through the city. Planning Commission would hold a series of reviews. We would be reaching out to all of our neighbors, even We're wanting to make sure we notify our adjacent municipalities, make sure they're aware of our project. And then pending the annexation, which would be effective January 1st, then the commission would meet again on January 3rd to essentially ratify their previous work meetings and discussions with the applicant. And we'll be doing a concurrent building permit review, which is done completely at the risk of the developer. That is something that is allowed by city code. It's not uncommon. Other cities do that as an economic development tool as well. So while we're doing the planning and site design review, there'll also be our building permit review at the same time. So ideally, once we have the land use approval from the Planning Commission, we will also be able to issue a building permit immediately following.
So this would negate the need of that building permit process to have to happen in the county and on some of those things that we talked about earlier.
Right.
Is that correct?
Right.
Good.
Yeah, once it became clear that really it was the grading permit that they needed and that the county had the ability to issue that grading permit without any prior permits or approvals from the County Planning Commission, we felt like that was the optimum process for all parties involved.
Okay.
So we'll be bringing a developer agreement. We'll just be working with the county directly with the developer.
Okay.
And we've been meeting, not regularly, but we've had multiple meetings with the county to discuss this, as well as exchanging emails, phone calls, making sure everybody's on the same page. We've been meeting with the development team, make sure they're aware of the standards of what they need to do to meet our timeline and the county's timeline.
And they're comfortable on the county side as far as what we're discussing here and that.
They are. They were a little bit nervous that the county wanted a full civil engineering report or application. As long as they're able to do the review as quickly as they implied that they stated to us, they felt comfortable being able to meet their deadlines with the county.
There's things we have to do where there's a letter that Hammy's drafting from our mayor to their mayor and a few other things that have to happen, and those will all be, so there's still a bunch of steps between now and November 15th, but no understandable action.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. All right, then we'll move on to discussion relating to building setbacks.
Okay. I believe because the mayor and at least one city council member has received an email or a letter from some concerned residents about development here in Town Center, that the council wanted to have this discussion about talking about setbacks. So in your packet, I included a series of tables out of the residential or the agricultural zone, residential zone, and the mixed use zone. This is where we allow our residential permits or building permits. So those are all for your reference. The concern that came up here in Town Center is that the development agreement modifies the setbacks and allows a 5-foot rear yard setback for a single family home. And in some places, modifying a setback actually can be appropriate. This happens to be Alfred's Alley in Philadelphia. It's the longest continuously occupied residential street in America. It's very charming. You know, it obviously has these historic patterns. But if we apply these setbacks in places where they simply don't work very well, as in this case, there's a grade change at the property line. And you can see actually this stub road, that curb wall is essentially at the same height as the top of that 6-foot tall vinyl fence. And you see a little bit better relationship along this property line. So obviously there's times when it's appropriate to modify our design standards or zoning standards, but it has to be carefully used. The development agreements are what they are. Short of the developer willing to come to the city and make an amendment or potentially us ask the developer to see if they're willing to make an amendment, they're essentially vested. They have this right. But we don't allow this as a standard throughout the city. We currently, as you saw in your packets, we don't allow 5-foot rear yard setbacks in the city. So I don't know if there's additional feedback you want to provide to staff, if there's something you want to change about our existing code to prevent this in the future, or...
What I would like to see in the future when we're looking at development agreements is that if there is a request to change a setback from our standards, that that the developer comes and shows the Planning Commission exactly where those setbacks are going to be, and they're specifically tied to specific locations, so that the Planning Commission can review that and make sure that it's within the intent of what we're planning as a city.
One thing that I've seen many cities do whenever you're doing like a plan development or a development agreement is you can modify setbacks, but up to a point where when you're crossing property line. Like in this situation, the homes that were built by Edge, I believe, had a 10-foot rear yard setback. This builder is Century Communities, and they're using the 5-foot rear yard setback. Ideally, they would have mirrored. Right, we would have had the same setback on either side of that. This fence line represents a phase of development. So this is a different subdivision altogether between the two, although they're both in the town center. This is obviously all in the town center. So there are some things I think we could modify or limit, like where we do those exceptions or variances to our setbacks.
The location that we received an email about is... I mean, it's really, really close. Their houses are way farther than I think anyone ever truly intended to allow happen. And so I think your suggestion about, especially on the outsides of the project and requiring a separate
equal
setback.
Equal setbacks, right.
Not even equal, but that outside of the project, maybe not letting them adjust that particular setback,
right,
but only internal to the project can they reduce the rear setback so that it doesn't affect the neighboring the neighboring project.
Now, on this particular case, even though we're talking about vested development rights, I have approached Century Communities and asked them I've explained the problem to them. They readily understood the problem. They want to be good neighbors. They're looking at whether or not they can commit to selling only their smallest footprint floor plan on these, I think it's 4 or 5 lots in this area. They also have, I propose that they look at planting a row of columnar trees, like a columnar oak tree, which does really well. It holds its leaves throughout the winter, so it creates a visual screen even through the winter months. They were open to that, and then again, making sure that they follow the grading plan, making sure that we're controlling drainage. So right now, I've made that proposition. I'm waiting for a reply for them. We met last week and went out on site. I thought I would have a response by tonight. Unfortunately, I did not reconnect with the applicant agent. But we are working on that. And I've been in touch with the neighbor who's been most concerned about this as well, letting her know what's happening.
Okay. I know, obviously, as you pointed out, there's certain times where it does make sense and there's certain times where it doesn't make sense. I would like, just from the planning staff, since you guys are most familiar with where those situations apply, to identify those to help give us a little more education of where you think it may make sense if it's requested in those areas that it definitely doesn't. And certainly where you have different developers or bordering subdivisions to each other, I agree that that's obviously one that doesn't make sense, so that they don't mirror each other on the same side.
The unfortunate thing about this one phase of development is that this is the only area where Century Homes, with that 5-foot rear yard setback, is backing onto a product that's not their own. Everything else within the subdivision, they're essentially affecting their own customers. And in fact, these are the smallest lots in the entire subdivision. So we have a compounding issues. We have different phases of development. We have changes in grading. We have the smallest lots of the whole phase right here. And so it just kind of created this unfortunate.
When were these projects originally approved?
I think I had, you remember the timing on this? 2016?
2016 on the one phase.
In 2014?
Yeah.
So it's been a while. So this is kind of showing that the impacts of the decisions and the things we do now affect years down the road.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think, of course, the development agreement itself was 2000.
The setbacks were approved in 2008.
Yeah.
With the
yeah.
original approval.
Yeah. Right.
I think a little bit of the broader discussion on this issue is, and I know that Councilor Henderson is one that's had some concern over setbacks
right.
as well. So, one, I would request that we look at maybe bringing this item specifically back to a work meeting again when we have the other members here to allow them to be able to express the concerns, because I know that it's more than just myself and the mayor that are sitting here today, because I think one of the discussions that we may need to visit as a council is there some of these that we don't think for our community is appropriate at any time? Is a 5-foot setback, you know, for a rear setback ever appropriate? And I think that's, you know, that's a question for us to really hash through
yeah.
as a council, again, with a little more input from our planning department, again, of maybe some of those situations that may or may not, you know, definitely be something for us to consider
yeah.
there.
I think for a rear, for single family, unless it's alley loaded product, I don't think so. It just doesn't make sense. And in fact, the representative for this development essentially agreed that was, you're not creating a usable rear yard for
right.
anybody.
Right, you're creating a dog run.
And yet they're doing it because that's what's allowed.
Right.
So I
think that's where it comes down to that broader discussion
yeah.
is granted there's some agreements out there that allow some of these, but as a matter of policy moving forward for our community,
right.
I think if we want to say, because of some experience with these, that we don't think it's
yeah.
it's valuable to our community, we make that change to not allow that at all moving forward. But again, I think that this is a pretty significant issue, and I want to make sure, I think it's appropriate that we continue this discussion with maybe a little more input from the planning department on other areas where they've seen this be an issue, and let the other council members weigh in.
I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
We'll talk about this some more.
All right, presentation of the proposed annexation agreement. Gordon.
All right. This is on for next week. We're looking at an annexation public hearing today in the regular meeting. But we wanted to go over the annexation agreement, the key points. It's in your packet. Oh, thank you. I don't think we have anything on the slide for this, but because it's just words. So I just wanted to go over some of the key points of the agreement. And so in the packet in point three, zoning the property, we have it that the property would be zoned our TM zone. And the reason for this, as we've talked about, is that in the county it's currently zoned M1, and our policy has been as we annex properties in from the county, they stay in the same or comparable zone that we would have that would match it, unless we've gone through some planning process that allows for a change. And we haven't done that. And so our policy is would be bringing in the TM zone. However, the property owners had some concern about that and would like to look at some other uses. So we put in this development agreement that after the annexation, that the city would be willing to look at a planning process to look at a number of uses in there, including residential. But that is something we'll talk about a little bit more in detail later. The other things that are important to be in here is that they currently have a construction site for Daybreak on this property, and they wanted to let that be grandfathered in while Daybreak is using it. We told them that's in here, that if this was approved, that non-conforming site would be able to stay there. That the city would build, and then the other things is the city would build the water line along the U-111 that would service our first building, and that we would also construct
the new alignment.
This I was yeah. just going to say, this is the new alignment.
New alignment.
Proposed alignment of U-111.
Right. We're doing the design right now and doing the environmental document. Justin and Blake are feverishly drawing lines on maps, get it all done.
And approximately what west is that new?
It's about 7,300 west. I'm talking 73. And in the proposal, the developer would give us the right-of-way or active easements for the water line, so we would not be paying for those. Anyway, if you have any questions or anything, we can talk more about it, but this will be hopefully in a final draft form early enough so you can review this. It will be at least in your packet by next time we review.
So it will be given to us in time.
Yeah, it'll be given to you a week ahead of time.
We'll get it a week ahead of time, so we have plenty of time to review it.
Yeah, you will. Yeah. And it will come a week ahead of time with the annexation. There's no vote today, it's just a public hearing.
Okay. Thank you. All right, we will move on to the joint land use study update discussion.
Okay. So it was interesting. There's a lot of interest out in southwest portion of the county as a result of the Olympia Hills discussion that went on and so forth. So anyway, we had a meeting that came in about a week ago where Envision Utah, who the state has contracted with to do the Point of the Mountain study, and the scenes to have gone fairly smoothly for them, and they were not contracted to do the study for the Inland Port, which has seemed done poorly for everybody. So what they were looking at doing was meeting with us, West Jordan, South Jordan, Daybreak, the developers, the state, UDOT, putting together a group that would do the same thing that was done at the Point of the Mountain. They gave us a proposal. They thought that the project was likely cost $150,000 to $200,000, and that they would like a match from each of the cities of about $15,000. We want to hear back from all the other cities. They've talked to them. We just wanted to kind of get your phone. We think there's some possible positive advantages that come from it, but we also wanted to see what you guys think.
Gordon, can you just speak a little bit to the letter that's part of the packet from General Smith out there?
Hold on. Am I giving you something out ahead of time?
You did.
I think you did.
No. Okay. What I just talked to you was 3.6. Now I'm going back to 3.5. Thank you.
Okay, so let's talk about 3.5.
So back to 3.5. I also had a meeting with Camp Williams and a bunch of the neighboring communities. And these communities include those on the Utah County side, including Eagle Mountain, Saratoga Springs, MAC, their MPO, UDOT, MAG, Wasatch Front Regional Council, Lehigh, Bluffdale, anyway, all the cities around the camp. And a number of years ago, we did a joint land use study that looked at issues associated with the base and the planning and a planning effort with the base. And so there has been some discussion about how some of the roads need to connect between Utah County and Salt Lake County, how they would affect the base, how do you make this work. And in that discussion, Camp Williams brought up the idea of, let's go back and see if we can get some study funds to open up some of these specific issues. And there's four specific ones that are listed here, or three I think they had. Was the transportation, some fire mitigation, and anyway, I'll go through the
perimeter
letters.
Security.
The perimeter security, those are the three items. What their proposal is, MAG would be the sponsoring entity. They would receive the funds, and then they would hire the contractor to do the study. We would be a stakeholder like we would before. We would have a technical group and a policy group that would attend meetings and direct kind of the process as it goes along. It generally takes about a year, year and a half. Camp Williams, with all of our effort, would be submitting for the funds, and it would, so at this point, the cost would be nothing to the city other than sending you guys to meetings and us going to meetings, and we do that anyway, so. And we think that there'd be some benefit. Again, what happens when you finish one of these studies, when we did the last one, it opened us up to be able to get aid prep funding. You have to do the study processes. Now there's some federal funds that would be available to us if we do the study for fire mitigation up on the mountain, which could include Justin running water line up there or doing some other things. It could also enhance recreational facilities up there. And so that's part of this study when they talk about the fire mitigation. So staff is extremely supportive, and we want the council to direct us to go ahead and be a part of this and be supportive, and then we'll be bringing you back information. Eventually, we should get a plan that gets adopted on those three things: transportation, security, and fire mitigation.
I don't see why we wouldn't be a partner in this.
I mean, being a partner in the jailer study previously, we've seen the benefits that have come to our community as a result of that, and this adding basically another potential layer of support for that, I'm fully supportive.
Okay.
Nicole?
I'm supportive as well, of course.
Okay.
It's a no-brainer.
All right. So you have your three nods. Okay. So any other direction you need from council on that?
That's all I need from you.
Okay, so why don't we move on to what you were trying to talk about, which was 3.6.
Okay, so on 3.6, this is the end. I've taken a bunch of stuff out of context, so we're going to go with the Anthem commercial. My mind's a little, it's after 5:30, I shouldn't really talk after that. In fact, generally, I don't even talk on these closing, or these presentations. The Anthem commercial, we have finished up all the documentation of the, we've finished up all the reimbursement agreements that have been reviewed both by John. I think he was, is he here today?
Oh,
he was in the, he was working on it just as we walked into the room. And I think
the
we have the participation agreements with the developer on the concepts. And so the agreement would allow for our developing friends to come in, build their store. We're going to put in the, that agreement's going to come to you next week.
In two weeks
for you to vote on.
So this is the agreement to allow the new Anchor grocery store to come into the Anthem commercial area.
Yes.
Off 118th and Mountain.
In the Anthem commercial. Okay. It will be, there are some reimbursements in terms of the TIF that we're doing, as well as some sale tax to pay down some of the costs so that they would come to our city. The agreement is they have to start construction by March 2019 and be operational by March 2020.
So they have to start construction next March and be open a year later.
Yeah. So they are bringing
a building permit by March 2020. Building permit.
Building permit. So the shovels have to hit or whatever. So building permit.
But the store open is the thing we probably actually care about.
Yeah.
So
it's March 2020.
And Gordon,
yes.
Sorry to interrupt. What are the repercussions if they don't meet the deadlines that we put in place?
Then they're default. We don't give any money.
It's all tied back to the TIF, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
And
if so, it's tied back to everything.
So the agreement specifically says these guys have to start. They have to do it by the timeline outline. Otherwise, it just disappears.
So there's some great incentive for them to meet that timeline because of the tax increment financing that will return to them because they're open and have business happening.
Yeah, not only incentive for the grocery store, but for the developer.
For the developer.
All perfect funding. All right, so we'll bring that to you. Now, the one thing I wanted to bring up is that it's actually the RDA that's going to be doing that. So in 2 weeks, there's going to be an RDA meeting where the city will be contracting with the RDA, and the RDA will be contracting with the developer. So you'll see us having to approve these things twice, once between the city and the regular city council meeting. We'll adjourn into an RDA, and the RDA is going to make the actual agreement. Is that correct, John? That's what I wanted to explain, so I'm done explaining.
Okay. Well,
there'll be a whole raft of agreements that you will see.
I'm sure, yeah. But if it means that we can get this area moving forward, then let it be. We'll take a raft of agreements.
Yes. So in your packet for the next item, 3.7, we were talking about surplus property. We brought these to you before. The city owns... this is the PowerPoint. I wasn't listening. This is it right here. So the city owns 2.49 acres right here. We've had a number of inquiries of people wanting to purchase it, and we have an appraisal coming in on this. And so we don't want to move forward. If we were tonight looking for directions, if we're ready to try to entertain offers and get to the highest and best use and bring you some numbers to see if you want to sell that, but we want to make sure before we get aggressive that this is a piece of property you guys want to sell.
Yeah, we're bringing back this because we've actually had conversations with the mayor and council last month about this parcel and another one we'll talk about that we looked at them hard to see what could else work for park space, what won't work as well. And I believe we got some nods from all of you that saying, yeah, go ahead and look through this, but we're looking at for an official nod on the record to get out and see what we can do with this property and the other one. And then bring back the proposal and get something interesting. Cool. We're still looking for other park sites. Let's do up the Main Street as a
well, and the Arches Park that we just did the groundbreaking on is right there, right?
Right, yeah. Correct.
So it's not like this area doesn't have
any. No, but we're still looking. We've been sensitive to what the residents have said and what the council's directed us to do. We're still looking for
and
locations.
That's the dental office that's right next to it, right?
There, yeah.
Right.
So we're working with
and the church owns the property behind.
We've met with the LDS Church. They're willing to put that in surplus too. So we're looking at maybe combining to get this whole thing developed in some kind of commercial stuff. So
I don't have any real concerns as long as it's all developed as commercial.
Yeah, that's what we're
I would have quite a bit of heartburn over any residential units going in that area.
We understand. This is already zoned C2, so we would anticipate that this whole thing will be zoned C2.
C2.
And we've general planned the whole thing already C2 commercial. So that was one of the actions.
What is the church property currently?
It's currently zoned, I think, R210, but the general plan calls it out as commercial. So they would have to amend the general plan before.
They could use the zoning that they have, but that's nothing that we will stop anyways.
We may even, we're addressing that with them.
Okay.
So we're trying to get this all
commercial. Yeah, if that's all commercial, I don't really have any concern with it.
Well, one of the things we're looking at is some rehab kind of things that might go back there. It'd be medical facilities for people that have their knees replaced and want to just sit around for 3 weeks.
That's great. What?
You don't sit around there.
Okay, hey.
My presentation.
Come on, man.
Look at what?
They take
right,
drugs.
Yes on the first one from me.
Okay, this is the other piece. We do have an appraisal back. It actually came in at about the $5.4 million is what the appraisal came back. And the appraisal was if it was clean.
Right.
We have ranges, and we're still negotiating. We've talked to different folks. So there, I believe this is a high. I believe it's going to be below this after further discussion, but not like a lot. So there is some money to be gained with the sale of this. Again, this is already zoned in C2, general plan C2. So it would be commercial. Now, we would put restrictions on it, like we talked about, in terms of buffer. So when it's sold, those restrictions would be part of it. Those really don't affect the price, the kind of restrictions, the buffer, the uses, not having people overlooking the backyard.
Loud, noisy, obnoxious uses.
But we don't want to go aggressively forward.
Because this is, when we did our general plan for the amendment for the commercial stuff, this is the piece of property all those residents showed up for, right?
Yeah,
this by far had the most comments.
And have we had these same discussions with the residents since we've moved to the point of...
We've had other follow-up discussions. Mike has met with them, and what we told them, we got a list of all their concerns. We met with the community facilitator, and we kind of, you know, some of the people, I think they all understood that it's going to be some kind of commercial. And so what we did is we outlined some things in terms of the buffer, how we would mitigate the impacts to them in terms of some distance, the lights, the landscaping and what kind of uses would come right against their back. So in those things, if you're comfortable moving forward, Mike and Brent would put together a list of things that we would record on our own property, so when someone buys it, that's recorded on the property, not necessarily a zoning condition, but these are the restrictions of when we bought it. And they're in favor to us, so we get to remove or keep them, whatever we want. And then,
so part of the concerns the residents showed back at the open house and those things was, you know, could we use it as a park or whatever, this in our parcels, and we look through this to develop this property in a park that makes that we can actually feel like we could be safe in and stuff like that. It doesn't work well at all, but we are sensitive to what the residents have told us about what they would like and prefer. And I think we can be very smart about what kind of development we're going there. We do have an interest in some developers already, and that it won't go fast. The cleanup will be painful and go take off for quite a while. A lot of work has to go in that to make sure that's mitigated really well. But here's the third parcel that we've kind of got to go ahead and bring this back to get the nod to move forward.
Well, I think that obviously the biggest challenge with this particular parcel is the contamination on there and the cost of remediation of that. So I think I'm in favor of moving forward on this process to at least try and get it to the highest and best use for the city and move on.
I agree. The only thing that I would request is that as staff is kind of nailing down those restrictions, and we once again go talk to the adjoining homeowners to make sure that we are including them in that process, because we made it very clear that when we did something with this, we were going to include them in that process. So I just want to make sure we continue to do that. Other than that, though, I agree. I think that I would like to get the contaminated soil out. This is going to be the best use for us to get it out, is to get this off of our books and have them develop.
And to your point on the involvement of the community, the community facilitator program, I think, is obviously the great avenue to be able to do that.
And that's where all the meetings have been held. So
perfect.
Been great.
And Nicole?
Yes, I'm supportive of moving forward with all the caveats you've all listed.
All right. Okay, so we will move on to the discussion pertaining to funding for the master plan and impact fee studies. Okay. You got a clicker, Alan?
Let's stand right here.
You can come over here.
Can you call here? Over here. There's room over here. I wanted to clink the cranes back on there.
Okay. So we've had a number of annexations and changes, a lot of growth since some of our master plans have been updated. So we're coming to you to talk about why we need to update them and process that we're going to go about doing it. So we've had a lot of annexations and changes since we started our transportation master plan about 2 years ago. Every time we get to the point where we think we're ready to bring it and get adopted, we annex something else in, or something changes and we have to kind of go back. And then every time we do that, we go talk to John, and our population's all changed, and we have to basically start the whole front end of the report. And so it's been a challenge for us. And so we're at the point now where I think we can draw a line in the sand, say right now we're going to do these studies and update them, and then run them all the way through, bring them to you in a few months, get them adopted with the impact fee studies, and then if we have another annexation, then we'll just do an update at that point. We're going to stop changing the line in the sand, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And then so we need to address our recent growth. We've had some growth in areas where we weren't really anticipating. RSL kind of made some big changes for us, built a lot of roads. And then we also want to ensure that our impact fees are collected and expended properly, because, you know, we collect them, we have to spend them in 6 years. We have to spend them on projects in the impact fee facilities plan. And if we don't show that we're doing that, then we have to get the money back. And so, with that, we propose we're going to be updating our master plan, impact fee facilities plan, and impact fee analysis for our four main systems: transportation, storm drain, water, and parks. Our problem is we
have one that we've budgeted for, one that we've partially budgeted for, and two that we have not budgeted for. So we'll kind of run through those budgets right now. We're looking for a nod to get us going on it, and then there'll be a budget opening that comes back in January to actually
approve these budgets. Remember, these come out of the impact fee budget, so budgets that we've collected specifically for this, and so it's not going to take away services from general fund, like snow plowing and road repairs.
And when we talk about impact fees, just so that residents are aware, these are fees paid for by people that are moving into new construction, not by our current residents.
Yep, it's by new development, and it has to be used on infrastructure that is new. So not old infrastructure, not repairs, but it specifically funds set aside for the construction of new infrastructure to support new development.
Is there any... So right now all you're looking is for a general yes, go in that direction, right?
And I'll show you some numbers here of what we're looking at for the budget. And we'll bring that back to you. So master plan for transportation and the impact fee facilities plan and the IFA. We budgeted $45,000 this year. We talked with Zions Bank, we talked with our consultant, got some hard numbers put together and came back at 90. Because of the changes, we were hoping that we'd be able to use a lot of our old report, which we can use some of it, but the model has to be rebuilt, the transportation model. And so it came back a little bit higher than we anticipated. Plus, consulting fees seem to be kind of high right now, just because everyone's so busy.
Everyone's busy.
What would be the expected turnaround on this?
We're hoping to have this done in about 4 to 5 months. So that's the first one. Second one is the storm drain. We didn't budget anything for that this year. Part of the reason for that was the Danzy annexation. We had in the agreement that we were going to update the studies when they came into the city. The development agreement didn't get signed for a while, so we kind of held off and we're kind of waiting on what was going to happen there. That's now happened. It's been signed, so we're on the clock to get this done. So this one is a $73,000 budget change, proposed budget change to the...
So like they're going to propose a SWIFT plan with that?
Those will be... That's been budgeted for separately, and we have that budgeted for. We'll be talking about that next month. Then we have Justin, the water master plan. Is there anything you want to add on that, Justin?
No. We have pretty much wrapped up our master plan and impact fee analysis last year, but then with the annexation happening, we have to come back. A lot of the information on that plan was started in 2015, and so we need to update a lot of that. So we didn't budget for any this year because we thought it was wrapped up. Now we're going to go back and redo it. We have to update the model and all those things. So that's the anticipated cost there.
So those are the main ones that we are going through. Parks was already budgeted for, and they have enough to move forward with theirs. Want to give a couple of words of, caution on this. We're going to get through this. We're doing a general plan update. So when the general plan update finishes, we're going to have to come back and update all these. So as we've talked with the consultant, we said, let's write this so the update is really easy. That's not rare to do an update. Often, Spanish Fork City, I talk to them, they do theirs every year. And it keeps you on the good side of the Home Builders Association and those folks that, challenge these from time to time.
Right.
They want to make sure that you're spending their funds properly. So we will be back next year's budget asking, and it'll probably be a lot smaller amount because it'll just be an update for some changes like this proposed Kennecott annexation and things like that. And when we change the general plan, we'll have some areas that'll adjust the densities and what type of development's going to go in.
So you're being a growth city.
Yep, growing cities, update often. And really, at a minimum, you should update every 5 years. So,
Blake, the point I was going to make, I think you briefly made, which is these impact fees are scrutinized. And so I actually was pleased with the point you made about our city doing less of the work and more of it being done by consultants, simply so you have the neutrality, because they are being scrutinized, and more especially in these fast-growing communities. So I'm supportive moving forward with all of these.
Okay, thank you. I got it.
I'm supportive, absolutely. You know, keeping up on as we continue to work through new development in our city, we hear continually, you know, concerns over infrastructure and being able to support it. And the way to be able to do that is obviously to keep our plans updated and to make sure that we're collecting the appropriate impact fees to support that infrastructure growth as we move forward. So I'm supportive as well.
Yeah, go for it.
Great. We'll be bringing them to you soon. Thank you.
Okay. All right. We'll move on to the last item for our work meeting, which is city manager updates.
Okay, Mayor and Council. We don't have a whole lot, but a lot of things have been happening the last few weeks since we met, and maybe Gordon will have some great words of wisdom he'll bring about. But our founding mayor, as most people know, had passed away last Saturday evening, and I know that a lot of new residents don't know what he was able to do for this community. The town center and what's kind of ended up being look-alike and layout was a lot of his work, and I mean the great things. A lot of people don't know this, that we would never have a library in our community at all because we had a bookmobile that used to come out in the Harriman area. And his great vision of what libraries do for community, he pushed hard to get our library built out here, showed the need, and by doing that, he actually had the library in an old city hall, come onto the outdoor of the basement, and then moved down there to the strip mall. And then the county realized that there was such a great circulation and support by the family and our young demographics out here. It was what he was going to. In fact, now we have probably a strong need for another one. He had a great vision for that. The rec center, he went out on his own and raised $6 million. So this rec center ended up being the biggest rec center in Summit County system to date. As they saw the county, because Provo has the biggest one now. But it's not that, it's about the use and about the vision of bringing a community together. He's also the strong person that thought about the, well, the incorporation of Harriman, but making sure that we was able to drive some of our own destiny. He also, we're hearing a lot about the high school boundaries now, and the high school was built in the wrong place. Well, there might be some merit to that, but guess what? They didn't have a place to go, and he was very passionate about driving that sense of community. And there's a lot of community pride that's come about with the Harriman Mustangs. Remember, about 10 years prior to the incorporation, there was a April Fool's article in the Tribune about Harriman High. And it was an April Fool's joke, but how that came about. So during this time, Mayor and Council, because we don't have a policy in place to guide staff of what should be approved or not, I've reached out to a few of you, and you have no issue with the city showing support during this time of the family grieving for the loss of their grandpa, their father, their husband, and our dear friend, that the flags will be full and half-mast from Friday evening to Monday morning, city flags. We are providing an escort of the funeral services by HPD. Some of their details are coming about, but our HPD will be part of the honor, and with the Army as well, will be out here. And Unified Fire Authority will be involved with the, I believe, the pulling of the flag. The details are getting worked out. So we're basically updating you what your city, because we don't have a policy in place. I think we will bring a policy back that going forward, anybody that's been elected official in this community deserves those honors. And it's cliche that the first time we have to use it is the first mayor as well. He's involved as a mayor for 10 years. He's involved with the community for many, many years before that. A lot of people don't know he served on Harriman Association, but he was involved during the contamination cleanup through Kennecott and Gers. That took about a lot of heavy lifting 5 years prior to that. Yes, I'm kind of laboring in reflecting. I've been part of that with him, and I got to be with him last Thursday evening for a little bit. residents of Harriman like what we've become or not, they cannot avoid to look around and see the great things that have happened. He is one of honor. He is one that believed in our youth, believed in our school systems. He believed in making places for families to gather and for the community to gather and have a strong sense of community pride. So we owe him quite a bit, in my opinion. So I hope the mayor and council will support us moving forward. The services will be viewing in the chapel next to Copper Mountain Middle School, just south of that, from 6 o'clock till 8 on Friday evening. And Saturday morning, the services will be viewing again from 9:30 to 11:30, with the services starting at noon, and then the interment will end at the Harriman Cemetery. The chief and his staff is involved with trying to funeral procession that may wind through the city just a little bit. They help get the car stretched out, and then they're working through with our staff, Public Works, and Wendy to make sure that we can get people part. I've heard from quite a few people he was well known and he had a huge effect, so it will be a big deal. So that's hard to top that one, what's been going on. But I want to say that our first few weeks of HPD has been phenomenal. She's got a chief's report, but as your city manager, it's really nice to know the people we've been able to bring on. They're already very well liked. And we have one in the room tonight that, if you don't feel liked and loved already, I don't know what, but everyone, Wendy's told me, he says, I want Marcus Lopez at every event we have going on. So, it's been a good thing, and we watched our employees come together as a family unit. And had a few bumps in the road, Chief, but like they predicted, we'd have more calls. We are getting more calls. Your public believes and loves having your own police department. Covered that over and over again. And I know you'll hear the rest about the chief's report, probably things you want to know about here, but that's his lane to, and I said, you have some bragging rights coming out. You've done very well, Chief.
Thank you. I couldn't have done it without Jose.
Thank you.
Jose was a hit with the kids. Yes. Meet HPD now.
Terrified the parents.
How many push-ups did you do?
1,000.
Are you looking for any specific direction?
No, I think I was also wanted to see if Gordon has any updates. We'd not be able to collaborate through the day.
No, I think you know where we're at. We could go into a close, maybe handle most of the items, and then see if that, we'll do that now.
Yeah. If we can have time for close,
I think if we can get through it, absolutely.
Fantastic.
Nicole, if you'll just hang on, we'll do what we need to do to go to get ready to go to close, and then
I will accept a motion to move to the
meeting. So I'll make a motion to temporarily recess our assistant council work meeting to convene in a closed session for the purpose to discuss the purchase, exchange, or lease of real property as provided by Utah Code Annotated 52-4-205.
I'll second.
Okay. Nicole?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
How about yes? Thank you. We're moving into closed meeting.